Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Hulkcast. As per usual, I'm James Rushton, bringing you the latest Aston Villa news and results. Again, joined by Daniel Raza. How are you getting on, pal?
8 on the bounce, mate. I am doing fantastically. I'm doing fantastically, mate. It is a pleasure to be an Aston Villa fan at the moment.
Oh, it's amazing. So since we last recorded, we beat Blackburn. And we're thinking, can we make it 6-7? Can we make it 6 even? Because we had a hard match against, of course, Sheffield Wednesday, managed by Steve Bruce. And that was a tough ask to go there and get the win. We'll cover that later on in a short detail because I know we missed that. Then we beat Rotherham. And now we beat Bristol City 8 games won in a row. And Villa have a real chance to make it 9-10 because the opposition they face are certainly among the weaker in the Championship. But more on that later, mate. I think first things first, we need to speak about the match that happened yesterday because it is a game changer. Villa beat Bristol in a real 6-pointer. Hard, tough match, but Villa came out looking superior.
Yeah, interesting as well, because when we saw the starting lineups at the start, it was confirmed that Jack Grealish was too ill to start. And as well as that, Tyrone Mings obviously was ruled out of the game due to his second yellow card and his sending off in the game against Rotherham. So Villa fans may have been ever so slightly pessimistic heading into the game. But, I mean, the fair play to them. They all pulled off a very, very big victory, which now leaves Villa in 5th, I believe, basically leaving Bristol with some catching up to do.
Yeah, I think it's incredible the turnaround we've had since we even discussed jumping into the top 6. I know me and you were quite nervy about that proposition, but we've done one better, mate. Top 5 now. We're 5th place. Of course, Bristol do have a game in hand, but we've got a 4-point cushion over Bristol. And even better, in terms of falling out of the playoffs, Villa have got a 5-point cushion over Middlesbrough, who completely, you know, they fell apart. They've since won 2 on the bounce, but they completely fell apart and dropped out, leaving a door for Villa to jump right in. And now Villa, you think about dropping out of the playoffs, mate. If you in terms of optimism, you're looking at chasing down West Brom for 4th place now.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is the thing. Villa could very realistically finish 4th now. But when it comes to the playoffs, in all fairness, finishing 4th and 5th is exactly the same, isn't it? Because you get the same opponents. but having said that, it would be nice to finish above them and just, I think, to be fair, just keep the momentum going. I think it would be really nice to carry that momentum into the playoffs. I think if you look at last season, when Steve Bruce obviously sent us on a very, very good winning run, and again, got to be very appreciative of that, there was then that wobble, which actually also coincides with why we've got to be careful for the next couple of games. That wobble when we lost to both Bolton and QPR, I believe it was, if my memory serves me correct. And then heading into the playoffs, we didn't have that kind of momentum. But now on 8 wins in a row, I think that would be the biggest positive. Rather than thinking about finishing 4th or whatever, if we can carry that momentum into the playoffs, that will be the most important
thing. So heading into this Bristol match, were you nervy at all? Because I think I was. I think we've all been indoctrinated a bit by this Villa belief that you do have to be, you have to be nervous. But I think you look at the teams and I can't believe we were nervous. Villa's quality is there to see. And I mean, Bristol are managed by a great coach and Lee Johnson. More on him definitely later. I think we've got to speak about some of the things he said after the match.
Yeah.
But mate, in terms of quality, Bristol don't have that quality. They've got a coach that makes them so much better, but Villa have that as well. And Dean Smith, they've got a quality coach, especially at this level. He's proven to not just be a man who the job is too big for. A lot of people thought the job may be too big for him, especially after he collapsed to West Brom. But in the last 2 games, we've seen him make changes and tactical decisions that have not only benefited the team, but have won the games.
It's funny, isn't it? He's always got this straight face on his look where you kind of almost know he sort of knows what he's doing. He's never acted defeatist after a game. Do you know what I mean? He's never, you know, sort of thrown his, thrown his boots into the ground, has he, you know, after a bad game. Like he's always got this focused look on his face as though he knows what's gone wrong. And there was that struggle. There was that struggle in January and February, but something has clicked. And you talk about that nervousness before the game. Well, for a large part of, in fact, the start of the year, for a large part of this half of this season, this was the sort of team we were lining up with. Neil Taylor, Al Mohammadi, Tanzibi obviously wasn't available. But we had, but for a while we were going were going with him and Chester. And so it just wasn't necessarily working as well as when we've had Mings and House. But the key name that we didn't have back then when we were in a poor run of form was Jack Grealish. And it was as soon as he came back that Villa went on that winning run. That's what ended that bad run of form. So suddenly with him being unavailable against a playoff rival, you sort of think to yourself, well, hang on a second. Was he perhaps the factor which was keeping Villa running? Like, are they now going to fall apart because he's not in that side? And I think it's a fair worry to have, considering those players weren't performing as well before he came back.
I think we're all nervous. I think realistically, it was more so the fact that when Grealish came back, we started winning games. So the easy link to make is we win games because of Grealish. And I think for the most part, that's true. But you've also got to think, outside of Grealish, look at the quality Villa have. Even at the back, you've got Jedinak, who's come a long way to be that centre-back that we needed to step up when we had no one else. You've got Axel Tuanzebe, who is, you know, he's gone underrated because Tyrone Mings came in and Courtney Howes came in and he was injured. But he is probably the best centre-back in the league if you look at everything.
What do you think, and so?
It's a direct challenge now, isn't it? Because you've got Tyrone Mings coming and lighting things up and Courtney Howes going quite underrated. It's a real mix-up, but I think before Mings came in and before Chester was injured and before Tuanzebe was injured, you could easily say Chester and Mings, 1 and 2, easily. And now that conversation's changed a bit, but I can't take it away from him. I can't take it away from Tuanzebe.
Does Chester now come back when he's fully fit again? Do you put him straight in there with Mings? Because I think that's
such a hard decision.
Isn't it a disservice to Hauser and perhaps Tuanzebe if this run of form carries on?
I don't know how you get around that, but that is an excellent problem to have, isn't it? Because even, look, Jedinak's not displacing anyone, but Villa didn't skip a beat when he jumped in. And that's massive.
And I think that's the other thing. I was nervous at the start of the season when he was playing centre-back, but that perhaps was to do with the fact we had right-backs playing left-back, and I don't know, it was all a bit of a mess. I didn't feel too nervous about the defensive situation yesterday, I'll say that. I was worried that we might not be able to score goals, but yeah, defensively, I don't know what it is. I just feel way calmer now. I haven't seen us make, you know, silly mistakes every single game, which we definitely were doing at the start of the season.
Yeah, I think Villa really capitalised on a Bristol City team that were getting extremely frustrated by some of the decisions that may or may not have went against them unfairly, because in the first half, both the manager Lee Johnson and his assistant picked up bookings for aggro on the touchline. And this aggro on the touchline was related to throw-ins going against them. And I'm thinking, I know Dean Smith picked up a booking against Rotherham, mate, but you don't lose your head over a throw-in, do you?
No, it was a bit silly, isn't it?
But, no, but they did look frustrated.
But, you know, the thing is, I totally do sympathise with Lee Johnson because, you know, looking a little bit later in that half as well, I can definitely understand why Bristol City fans would have been upset, because I don't think that first penalty that they should have had, I mean, that first penalty that Villa had should have probably stood. They did get pretty unlucky. They did have some bad decisions go against them. You know, let's put our hands up when we should.
So let's go on to Villa's first goal, because I think it's very important to talk about. It is the Tammy Abraham penalty. But the lead up to that, it's Conor Hourihan being fouled right in the centre of the box. And before we go into the penalty, actually, I want to say something about Hourihan. How many times did he get into that exact position yesterday? Completely unnoticed.
It was interesting, wasn't it? He's been pushing a lot further forward.
Without Grealish, it looks like he's got into that position. But he capitalised on it as well. He did score later on, but he also earned the penalty. And I've only seen it once, and that was from the whole end. Mm. And it looked clear to me. And it, you know, Hourihan foul with his arms raised up. You know, him and McGinn do this thing where when they're fouled, they do make it look very, very obvious like they've been fouled. Was it a penalty?
I don't know, honestly. Because I think I can understand why Bristol might have been a bit unhappy. It was a bit soft. You know, sort of the ball comes in and he's chilling there with the defender. And yeah, I don't know. I just wouldn't. I don't think that if it was against us, if that had been given against us, you know, we'd have been very upset. We'd have thought it was a bit soft. I think what maybe aggravates it just a little bit is the defender sort of lifting his knee up. I'm not sure whether that catches him in the back, but to me, it almost looks like Connor goes down very easily.
It's similar to the Mings one, isn't it? Because it's an obvious penalty when against Sheffield Wednesday, I'm talking about, when he gives away that penalty, it's an obvious penalty. But it is soft. It's like the faintest of touch, but because he raises his leg, because the defender has, you know, so much more power in that, it's a losing situation for them and the penalty's given.
Let me put it this way. If that's a scoring opportunity, if that is an opportunity where Hourihan thinks he can bang that in, he's not going down. I think it's one of those. He's perhaps felt that touch. He's felt the defender behind him and he's gone, right, might as well take the foul here. I'm not totally against that. I'm just saying that I can understand from a Bristol point of view why you'd be upset at that being given. And it is one of those that could go either way.
Well, Tammy steps up and buries that penalty, and it's all the more better because the pressure was on. You could feel the pressure in the whole end. It really was on because Tammy had, of course, missed against Rotherham earlier in the week. And it was a really cool penalty that he took early in the week. It was just, you know, style it out, no pressure, kick it to the side, easy as you come. The keeper dives the right way and saves it midweek. And the pressure's on, mate, because you know we had two penalties in that Rotherham game and he didn't take the second. He stepped down. Whether Codger stepped up or it's a question of Codger stepping up or him stepping down, I don't know.
Which is fair.
He stepped down for that one. Yeah, it is fair because I wouldn't want to do that.
It's what you should
do. If you missed one, you can't take one, can you? You surely cannot be in that spot. It's not fair. But he steps up against Bristol when the pressure's even worse, mate. And Villa need a goal because losing against Rotherham's one thing, but I think you could have written it off because of the referee, because of the red card, you could have went, okay, things were against us. But Bristol, it's a 6-point massive match, mate. Massive match. The pressure's on. He's already missed one. Steps up, bangs it down the middle. It's a goal to Villa, and you can tell how good that feels for him.
Yeah, definitely. I think he needed it as well because he's actually, to be fair to him, he's gone through a little bit of a period of not banging everything in. Which is something unheard of for Tammy Abraham. So whenever there is the opportunity with penalties like that, likewise for Codger, to be fair to him, likewise for Codger last week, it was nice to see him bang it in, and hopefully he starts finishing a little bit better now because we need him firing on all cylinders heading into the playoffs.
And there's an incident as well that we didn't speak about. It's Andy Wyman offside goal. Andy Wyman, probably Bristol's man of the match, everywhere from all over the pitch, throwing in the tackles, winning the ball back, creating attacking chances. He scores. It's offside. I'm not sure if this featured in any highlights package, but
no, it
did look like a really soft decision.
You can see it in you can see it on the Villa YouTube highlights. You can. It was a good goal, to be fair to him. In terms of, was it offside? Was that why it was disallowed? Or?
Yeah.
Right.
As far as I'm aware, I wouldn't have any other... I didn't even see anything in it, to be fair.
It's good.
I thought it was a bit of... I would say a shame as a neutral. I don't really care as a Villa fan, but I think it was soft.
Yeah, it was probably a little bit soft. It was a nice header as well. It was a really nice glancing header.
And he did the whole I'm not celebrating thing. I'm not celebrating. Fair play to him. And then he looks across to the linesman and flags up.
Fair play. It was probably offside. It was probably offside from what I've seen. The thing with Andy Wyman is like he's seriously underrated. But also there was times when he was playing for Villa where you knew he could switch it on perhaps just a little bit better. Perhaps it would have worked better in a different system. But he's a very hard-working player generally, especially nowadays. He's come on leaps and bounds since leaving Villa, to be fair to him. But there was one particular game, you know, whilst we're on the topic of Andy Wyman, which I remember incredibly, was against Liverpool, where he had Steven Gerrard in his back pocket all game.
Well, Andy Wyman, you know, God forbid Villa stay in this league next season, he looks like the type of player they'd want. The type of energy, you know, the underrated ability. He's not really known, even though he scored 10, assisted 5 or so. He's not really known in this league, is he?
Yeah, you could say that. I could definitely see him doing a better job in the Premier League.
Yeah, now than from before, definitely. And I think he is that type of Dean Smith bloke, but I think they'll probably look at a younger figure. And it seems weird speaking about Andy Wyman almost as this old man, because it's just so long ago now, isn't it?
Oh, he's an experienced Championship striker now.
Yeah, he's come a long way, but fair play to him. He's all the more better at Bristol. He's scoring goals and he's having fun by the looks of it. He was their most vocal player and he did seriously seem like he wanted to win that match. And credit to him, because he's always, I think from following his Twitter feed since he moved to Derby, he's been on loan at Wolves. And of course, he's at Bristol now. He's always seemed to have a soft spot for Villa and it did seem like he wanted to get the win yesterday. Just for, here's what you're missing, folks. But maybe there is a future. I don't know. It's completely hypothetical. And I don't think we'll be in this league at the end of the season because Villa are too good right now. I'm really optimistic. But there's another goal to speak about, mate. And it comes from Anwar El Ghazi, who passes through to Conor Hourihan, who's again in that same position where he won the penalty. And he hooks it to the side of the net. And Villa go 2-0 up in the second half. And scenes, mate, absolute delirium. Villa's team are better. Villa have got the form. Villa have got the momentum. They fought from a losing position. They've snatched a playoff spot from the jaws of championship mediocrity. They've done that. They've jumped in. They've made the case for them. Still, we didn't expect it. Still, we didn't expect to go 2-0 up, and we did. And El Ghazi slices the ball through. He had a fantastic day as well.
Yeah, El Ghazi was fantastic all game. Like, he's doing things which he wasn't doing before now. He's getting into the middle and cutting in way more than I've ever seen him do before. It's something new from him. He almost seems to take the mantle as well when the fact that Grealish wasn't on the pitch then as well. Like, he almost felt like he had to take it into himself to be the main playmaker. The other thing with El Ghazi is, I don't know if you've noticed, but he's actually seriously imposing. You know, for a player that you think of as a tricky winger, he's seriously imposing. And he almost seems to be able to kind of walk through defences and kind of find his pass, doesn't he? He's almost got that, I know this is going to sound really silly, but he's got that sort of Ronaldo stature, doesn't he? If you know what I mean. Yeah. He's got that kind of a body type where he almost seems upright whilst he's got the ball and carrying it. The way that he found Conor Hourihan there with almost ease, was ridiculous, and it was just a typical Conor Hourihan goal from there, you know, just power on the left foot, never any finesse really, to be fair to him, just power.
This is it. This is the real deal now. And Grealish isn't even on the pitch, and McGinn didn't even have the best game until 45 minutes, and then everything just turns on its head, and everyone is doing so much better. I couldn't believe it. Conor Hourihan deserved goal. El Ghazi though. What can you say about him, mate? I really am running out of words. Because from the stands, there's times when he doesn't commit to the challenge and he bottles the challenge and he doesn't go for the header. But when he's got the ball at his feet, it's almost like the entire pitch or something. It's like that Grealish thing where anything can happen now.
Oh, anything. Yeah. I think you have to pay the $5.5 million, whatever it is, at the end of the season.
$5.5 million is a steal.
You have to
absolute
get
absolute bedrock deal. I don't. If Villa are in this league next season, if they're in the Premier League or not, you're taking that deal. That's too cheap. That is so cheap. Considering, look, there are FFP worries, there are concerns about spending money, but think of the return that you get on a player like that. It's like McGinn. Spent $2.5 million. There is no way he goes for less than 20.
Oh yeah, exactly.
El Ghazi doesn't. We haven't talked at all about Glenn Whelan as well, who is just another revelation. Another revelation.
Oh, he did well as captain, didn't he?
He doesn't miss a beat. Doesn't miss a beat at all. Led, you know, it was him and Jedinak were just screaming instructions the entire game. Everyone on the same wavelength. And Glenn Whelan, a lot of people speak about the energy of John McGinn. I completely get that. But Glenn Whelan is the real deal. He never stops running. Or he always seems to have an extra burst of pace or speed on anyone. Like, he took the ball off some of Bristol's characters late on to the game. I was thinking, how are you doing that? How are you doing that? What is happening? Is it the crowd boosting your plot they do, McGinn? Because McGinn feeds off that energy. But Glenn Whelan, he's surely a bit more mature than that. He knows that regardless of the crowd, you have to do the job, and he seems to do it.
Yeah, he had a good game. And I think again, it just shows you how much he's improved this season. It sounds weird saying that about a 34-year-old player, but it does show you how much he's improved this season. The other thing that showed that was the way that McGinn and Hourihan were just able to keep darting forward and do what they needed to do. And they almost seemed incredibly assured when Whelan was around that pitch. As you say again, you know, he was stalking the center of that park. You know, he was he was all over the place. You know, he was making tackles as well, you know, which is good to see from him, because to be fair to him, again, we did not see that side of his game so much before. Aerially as well, he was doing well. I just think, you know, he's improved a lot, and I'm really happy for it. It's probably a shame that, or it's a shame that he probably won't be around next season, I'd imagine, if we do go up to the Premier League. But either way, he's definitely earned some eyes on him. And yeah, fair play to him. Did well as a captain as well.
He's become quite a fan favourite really late on into his Villa career. He's really stepped it up, and I think it will be a shame to see him depart. But man, if a team wants to play good football, he's got years left in him, easily.
You think so?
Easily. Because he doesn't look like he's 35, what now?
Mm.
And he doesn't look like he's missing a beat at all.
No, true.
At least a year left in him. I mean, look, if we're talking about Gareth Barry, he's what, 38, 39? Glenn Whelan, easily the Irish version of that.
He did have to do some work to get the best out of him, though.
Yeah, it's come a long way. Like, there's been ups and downs, but Villa were a team that kind of just did whatever they wanted for so long, and now that there seems to be a plan and plan Bs and instructions and, you know, tactical traps, it seems to get the best out of Glenn Whelan, who is a very intelligent footballer. Like, maybe that's it. Maybe it's not the burst of speed or the burst of pace, because that's ridiculous to speak about in a 35-year-old. Maybe it's the fact that he knows where people are going, because that's the instructions, that's the tactical plans, mapping out runs, mapping out traps that they're going for.
Yeah, true. Yeah, I can see that. And he works really well. He works maybe, really well with McGinn, especially.
Like, when you've got the ball at your feet, you've got to go from like A to D. You're almost spontaneously, haven't you? You've got to look at the situation before you and make a decision made on where players are lining up. But if you don't have the ball and you know where that player's going to run, you can almost shortcut that.
And that's really important as well, considering that Villa's play really sort of works on the whole idea of making forward runs. A lot of what Villa do now is basically finding open space. And I know it's a basic of football, but Villa seem to be doing this a lot more actively now. You know, kind of going a little bit more direct, so to speak. And I think that Whelan does a very good job in that sense. And I think it's so important to have a midfielder like that when you're playing three in midfield. You have to have somebody who can map out those passes. Because if you don't have that, then, yeah, it's a little bit more dog-like, the game there. And I think it's just nice to see. It's nice to see a different side to Whelan, because we definitely weren't seeing him do that before. We definitely weren't. And Smith seems to have found what he does well, and it's probably what he was doing well at Stoke as well.
Bristol City did score one back late on. I think it was definitely coming, because Villa had to retreat. Bristol decided to, you know, we're going to hold on to the ball, we're going to make you sit back now. They kind of tried to change the game on its head, and it did work for the most part, but they did score the goal. And whilst we were all nervous again after that, thinking 2-1 lead now, it's on the cards for a 2-2. Villa didn't lose their heads. Again, it's exactly like that Blackburn match. They didn't lose their heads, and they defended really coolly. And again, John McGinn, because when it hits injury time, it becomes John McGinn's hour.
Oh, does it?
He's time to do whatever he wants to do. He runs when the clock hits 89 minutes, the fourth official holds up the ball. It's almost like John McGinn's, that's his time to step up. Not like he didn't step up in the match, but it's in those last 5 minutes where he just does whatever he wants and he gets away with it.
He's got more stamina than anybody else in that team. Like, if there's any player in that side who you think can go 90 minutes, it's John McGinn, isn't it? And yeah, I mean, it never seemed a doubt, actually, to be fair. I mean, I think, you know, once it hit 80th minute or in fact, once it hit the 80th minute, I mean, I was confident by then, to be fair. I don't know what you thought, like being in the stands. Like, were you nervous up until then?
It's always more nervous because there's a lot of every mistake feels like, oh, it's going in now. Whereas on TV or in highlights, that's never the case.
I mean,
you know what I mean?
You also had the case. You also had the idea that, well, not the idea. You also had the fact that Keenan Davis and Henry Lansbury are now on the pitch as well. Two players who perhaps haven't played a lot. So you might have thought that perhaps at this point, Villa aren't going to launch too much of an attack, but you know, there were some good movements at that point as well. Though Keenan Davis very much looked close to scoring as well. I mean, it's not like Bristol were the only ones troubling Villa.
Speaking of McGinn, absolute star, but Keenan Davis comes on and he was incredible. Like, I'm not going to... He's clearly a different type of striker to Tammy Abraham. But what he did, it was, it's like Villa were a better team when he came on. And Keenan Davies tackling from the front, leading from the front. It's almost like Tammy's goal against Sheffield Wednesday when he steals the ball in the box and scores. Keenan Davies, that's his bread and butter. It's just winning the ball up front and making the team tick. He's never looking to score himself, which is a massive, you know, how does, you know, a kid like that, how does he do that? Because always they're looking to make a name. They're looking, this is my place. I'm losing this place. I'm a kid. I'm not getting this place. Tammy Abraham's there.
Oh, he's a tank.
How do you manage to pass the ball off like that and not take it yourself?
Almost.
How do you be that unselfish as a kid?
Could he be that our next? And I don't mean this in a bad way at all. Could he be sort of our younger version of maybe Libor Kozak or Emil Heskey?
I mean, yes, but better, because from what we've seen of Keenan Davies so far, when he come on in the first championship season against Brighton at the end of the season, you're looking, wow, this kid can hold up the ball. Then next season, you're looking, wow, he makes the team work. This season, he's only come on in bits and starts. But if you've seen a guy come on with so much confidence, the ability to take people on, the ability to win the ball up front, he has difficulty striking sometimes. He doesn't make the best positions for himself. But if you're looking for a guy to make something out of nothing, it's Keenan Davies. Every time.
Yeah, yeah. And it's genuinely, the other thing with him is you definitely can be confident that he can deal with the physicality of the championship. A lot of the time with younger strikers, you almost wonder whether they're going to get pushed off the ball, but he looks totally comfortable. And I feel very confident that he's going to kick on as well, because there was that period of time under Steve Bruce, I believe it was, when he was forced to pick Keenan Davies for a long stretch of games. And I do wonder when that's going to come back for him. But certainly watching his appearance against Bristol, it was very endearing. Like he did do well, and he was very unlucky not to score as well, because he almost threaded the ball straight through the keeper's legs, which closed up just in time.
Yeah, well, that keeper, I forgot his name now. I'm going to have to check it up. But McGinn almost scores late on when, do you know, he's holding up the ball in the corner?
Matt O'Leary.
McGinn is holding the ball up in the corner. The Bristol players advance on him because he's wasting time. Then he just darts past them all, straight into the box, almost scored. But Matt O'Leary...
It's Max. It's Max.
Max O'Leary, 5, 7, 10 saves that match. Villa should have scored a lot more. I think XG has them at 3.75 expected goals, minus a penalty. Let's call it 2.8 expected goals. Incredible.
It's only 22
from chances made. Yeah, and that's incredible. That is incredible. The fact that every time Bristol City come to Villa Park, they get their asses handed to them.
Is that a thing?
In some style.
Is that like a very big record that
we beat them in the championship first season. So we haven't played them for years and years. Then we played them in the championship first season. We do cock up at Ashton Gate quite a lot. Okay. We played them in the championship first season. I believe we beat them there. Codger scored, I think. Last season we beat them 5-0.
Yes, we did. Oh God, yeah, we did.
This season, the scoreline isn't great, but the chances we made in that match, I mean, there are doubts about the penalty, there are doubts about the referee and the chances he gave or took away from Bristol. But regardless of that, you're looking at Bristol not making anything and Villa making so many chances to score. So many. And that's credit not just to the players who started. You got Neil Taylor arriving in attacking positions, and he almost scored if it weren't for bloody Max O'Leary. John McGinn would have scored if it weren't for Max O'Leary. Conor Hourihan would have had two if it weren't for Max O'Leary, because he was in the face of goal. And Keenan Davies probably would have had one.
Might have been a different scoreline if the away fans were positioned elsewhere, though.
Okay, let's wrap this up. There's so many players I want to talk about in this game, but time, you know, we do have a few matches to speak about. We can't give everyone the credit they deserve. We have to talk about Lee Johnson, who was butchering the match for kicking off about a throw-in. He was kicking off about a throw-in. And then the penalty comes and he has to shut his mouth. I'll take the booking for moaning about the penalty, mate, if that's me. Just wait and have a moan later. But then he comes on, he's speaking about, oh yeah, Villa did this and that, and we do have to look at the performance of the referee, blah, blah, blah. And then he goes, the away fans weren't positioned behind the goal. And I'm thinking, so, yeah, there's a reason for that. You can do that as well.
Yeah, you can. You know what I mean? Yeah.
It's like when teams come to Villa Park and they win the throw-in, the coin toss, and they change the ends. They go, okay, you're going to attack the whole end in the first half. And that's unfair. It's like, okay. But that happens. You won the coin toss. That's just a stupid rule. And the other stupid rule is that home teams who own stadiums can choose where away fans sit. So what?
Yeah. I mean, if you
can, annoyed that if you can, they weren't behind the goal.
This is the thing, like, if you can fit your own fans, you know, sort of behind both goals, why wouldn't you? it's just tactically, it's probably a little bit smarter if you've got the choice, isn't it? And it's the way that it's been for years at Villa. So
I think most and quote unquote big clubs don't really sit away fans behind a goal, do they?
I mean, I
think you see a lot in the Championship. Like when we went to Fulham, we were behind the goal.
Oh yeah, we were, weren't we? Yeah.
But that's a different case because it's a quote unquote neutral stand as well, because for whatever reason,
oh, yeah.
at Hillsborough behind the goal. Most Championship teams do put people behind the goal, but you do have a choice. You can move them.
Yeah, yeah.
Like if you wanted to, you could go, we're only letting 500 away fans in. Sit wherever you please.
And what's that got to do with anything anyway? You know.
Yeah, I mean, look, atmosphere does help, but you are given a large away section. No matter where it is, you can make a noise and racket.
Yeah, of course you can.
Doesn't matter if it's behind
the goal.
Right,
it's still right next to the North Stand. It's still
exactly
right next to it.
And they are shooting up that way in the second half anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
And it does help. There has been times when you're thinking, oh, they're attacking up that way now. The fans are screaming. Blah, blah, blah. They've scored. And now they're running to the fans in the north, that you know, in the Witten Lane stand next to the North Stand. I don't care. It's a bit of a mute point. And he does come out with his shite after matches, doesn't he? Like every Villa match has been, oh, we'll see where we are at the end of the season. This, that. He's a great coach. I'm not going to take that away from him. But every time there is something else rather than the football, and Villa were all over him. Minus a penalty, Villa were all over him.
Yeah, they are. And they're winning that game no matter what, to be fair. Regardless, even, you know, I know decisions went against Bristol, but I think Villa were all over them for much of that game. And let's not forget the open goal that Albert Adoma missed earlier on as well. That probably should have gone in. Bit unlucky that it didn't. Yeah, as I can say, look, we've been on an eight game win streak for a reason. You know, Bristol have been sort of not amazing in the last few games, to be fair to them. You know, there's been times, to be fair to them, where they've looked like they should have been losing. And I know they have come back a couple of times, but Wigan, you know, they were in a winning position in that game, ended up ruining it. West Brom, they won 3-2, but you know, they were letting in goals, and they weren't incredibly impressive in that game either. So I mean, they haven't been amazing in comparison to us.
We're the better team. We won yesterday. We are fifth in the Championship table, and that is all credit to a number of key performances. We've only got three match balls to give, mate, so a lot of players are going to miss out. I want to know your man of the match.
My first one is going to be... I'm going to say Anwar El Ghazi. Just because of...
credit.
Yeah, just the way that he was creating things. The second chance that he created for Conor Hourihan to score later on. I have to give it to him. And I know it's perhaps not the done thing to give it the assist makers rather than the goal scorers, but I want to give it to Anwar. I thought he was just imposing in that game, and you know, I think Bristol City would have been scared of him for large parts of it.
And I would have given him another if it weren't for John McGinn, who again, maybe didn't have the best first 45 minutes, but he runs a show. He absolutely runs a show, and he stepped up in the wake of the absence of Jack Grealish. Gave Bristol City a game, would have had a goal if it weren't for Max O'Leary late on. Full credit to him. He's been a revelation again since his suspension, and he's come back. Incredible.
Well, last one then has to be Conor Hourihan. Yeah, he went down for the penalty and also scored the second goal. And let's also not forget the fact that he hasn't been getting into the team recently. He's found it very, very difficult to force his way in. But every time he comes back, every time he's been on the bench and gone through a little period of deselection, he comes back and he scores goals. And you forget how much of a consistent goal scorer Conor Hourihan is. And I just thought he did a very good job of reminding us all again. Getting into positions, he was the finisher. He was the main finisher for Villa in that game. So I'm going to have to say that the third one has to be Conor Hourihan. Surely,
don't disagree. I don't disagree. I think you could have went for Neil Taylor. You could have went for Twanzabi, Jedinak. Could you have went for, I don't know if I'd have went for Almo. Whelan for sure. Maybe not Adoma, Tammy. So yeah, I mean, there's a whole, we could have picked the whole team. So yeah, I don't think it's unfair to pick Hurahan at all. Hurahan takes the third one.
Easy. Fantastic. Easy. I think that was a pretty simple one there. Yeah.
Well, I feel sorry for the whole team. He probably could have, Neil Taylor could have been in shape for his first match ball, but the whole team bloody step up. Keenan, you could have, you know, I mean, Keenan Davis, for God's sake, could have had one. But Aston Villa, marvellous performance against Bristol City, but it is built on a performance midweek against Rotherham. It was a rough, tough match for Aston Villa. It all fell apart in the first half. Tyrone Mings got sent off. Villa missed a penalty. Villa conceded a penalty. Then Rotherham could have went 2-1 up had they capitalised on a complete non-decision, which left two strikers in a massive offside position with no Villa defenders almost around them. I think it was only Axel who was around them. They could have scored there and they would have taken the win. No doubt in my mind if they scored there. The referee was abysmal in the first half of that game, and Dean Smith did pick up a booking, and he was also picking up dogs abuse from the Rotherham crowd. The whole thing seemed against them. There's a Grealish dive as well, which you don't see often. There's a massive Grealish dive. When he falls down in the corner of the pitch, everyone's abusing him. Someone comes near him and he flinches and starts rolling around holding his ankle. And I think that captures nothing else to me other than complete and utter frustration. The whole game ran away from him in that first half.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. I mean, I have to say that there was a lot of criticism for referees, wasn't there? I mean...
Yeah, in that match. Oh, yeah.
What? Why? What? I mean, you were there, weren't you?
I was watching. I think the offside decision was bad. Tyrone Mings' second red. Second yellow, yeah. Was extremely harsh. I think you just give the penalty in that situation. I understand the reason it's a yellow, but if that yellow is going to turn into a red. The rules are stupid. The rules make us ask questions. We shouldn't be asking questions.
Were Villa bad?
Villa weren't bad, and neither were Rotherham. It was a complete and utter stalemate. As far as I'm concerned, both teams were going at it. Villa had the penalty and they should have scored. Rotherham were really, really up for it and they were G'd up for it and they were getting decisions and they probably should have scored two in the first half because, I mean, this offside decision, the bloke, there's two blokes and it honestly must have been a mile onside, offside. It's not like Mo Salah, his toe's offside and everyone's going, football Twitter going, oh, this, he always gets a blood decision.
Yeah,
Mo Salah. Yeah. It's his toe. That's on his shoulder. That's offside. I don't care. When you're getting that and a bloke is a mile offside and you're not flagging him up, there's a complete advantage given by the referee there and they should have scored. The only reason they didn't score, mate, is because they thought they were offside.
That's true. That is true. That is true. That did happen.
Sure. They would have won that. And it's not like, oh, Mings got sent off for a second yellow. Okay. It's an offside. Offside is a basic rule. Yeah, I get it if you're not flagging up because you can't see if someone's elbows offside and you're not flagging. The bloke was yards, miles, meters. You could have laid a fucking house. Sorry. He could have though. It was a ridiculous call. It was a ridiculous non-decision. And Dean Smith goes wild and he gets a booking. And look, Lee Johnson picked up a booking for moaning about a throw-in. Dean Smith picks a booking because Rotherham were given a clear-cut chance, registered clear-cut chance.
Is that the new fashion now? Basically, if you challenge a referee as a manager or a coach, you're getting a booking. Has that always been the case, or do you think referees have been thicker-skinned in the past?
Look, referees don't deserve abuse, and I think if they are getting abuse for decisions, that's bad. But when it comes to it, jobs are on the line. Jobs are definitely on the line. And don't look, yeah, you can't abuse refs. You can't surround refs. You can't do this and that. Their decision's final. But it comes to something when the other team is allowed chances based. And I mean, Bristol City fans will clearly agree with that. It comes to something when the game seems thrown away from you because of the referee's decisions. I think the Tyrone Mings red, it was extremely harsh. I think there's double punishment there. Usually you ain't sent off if you do that. Like, that rule came in, double punishment. You cannot, and because it's a yellow, you can double punishment. If it was a straight red, he wouldn't have given it.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, I think though, the second yellow with Mings probably was fair, though. Do you not think so?
Yeah, but he shouldn't have even had the first one.
Yeah, I know.
The first one's rubbish.
Yeah, I suppose so. But yellow cards do get brandished for sort of 50-50 chances, though, don't they? It does happen. I don't feel like we should feel too sorry for ourselves over it. Just to be a voice of reason. You know, basically, if you're booked, James, you know, you don't handle the ball in the area. Do you know what I mean? Tyrone Mings has to go down for some criticism here.
No, I'm not going to completely and utterly defend him. I don't even think it was a handball. If I'm completely honest, I don't think it was. We have no other angle on it apart from the angle shown, and it just looks like it hits the top corner of his shoulder and his arms are bent back. It's not like a deliberate handball.
No, I guess not.
Which is the rule. It's deliberate handball. Your hand has to be in an unnatural position and it has to be deliberate. If it's like that and your arm is stretched back and it's hitting the top corner of your shoulder, in my opinion, maybe it's a penalty. Mm. It's definitely not a second yellow. And Rotherham bloody got it as well because they gave away a penalty for the exact same thing and picked up a booking, so at least the referee
consistent.
So that second, that second half, Villa, 10 men, come out, Jack Grealish runs the show, Al-Mohammedi crosses in, picks up, the defender sticks his arm out, Villa get the penalty, up steps Jonathan Codger, and this is a weird thing, why is Codger on the pitch at this point? Because Villa are down to 10 men. Yeah, then that comes on. This is an insanely aggressive move.
Set out what it looks like on the pitch right now for Villa. Formation-wise.
Adoma's taken off for Jedinak because Mings is sent off. And you just have Al-Ghazi on his own on the wing. And then Al-Ghazi's taken off in the second half for Jonathan Codger. So then you have like a 4-3-2. Is that right?
4-3-2. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, you've got no wingers. You've got three central midfielders, and you've got two strikers.
And that's Villa won with a 4-3-2, and they looked better with a man off. That's unreasonable, isn't it? That shouldn't happen.
Well, I think like what's happened there as well, especially with I think this again is a pure Dean Smith move. This is when you look at Dean Smith versus Steve Bruce again. It's right. We're under the cosh against a team which is desperately trying to get out of the relegation zone, desperately trying to, you know, stay up this season, right? You with 10 men, it's one of these situations where you've almost got to fall on your sword, because if you've got 10 men on the pitch, you can't sit back and hope to break free, because it's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. Rotherham are going to push and push until they score, and they're going to work harder. It's like that is it. You know, it's 11 men against 10. You know, the overall hard work is just going to be higher on their side. So what you've got to do essentially is just hope that you can bang one in. You know, send up two strikers, ask your midfielders to work a little bit harder, create something, and once you've got a goal, you know, the whole perspective changes. And you can perhaps relax a little bit more then, but it takes guts to do that, James. It takes guts, but it was 100% the right move.
I can't disagree at all. It was ballsy, and it's all credit to Dean Smith for going for it, because Codger scores the penalty that equalises the game for Aston Villa, and he looked, true Jimmy Danger fashion, an absolute danger, because he was running the show, making the moves up front, almost scoring again for Aston Villa. But the goal that wins the game comes from Jack Grealish, who plays a 1-2 of Neil Taylor on the left-hand side. And this goal went viral. And it's not even his best goal. But this goal showed the world what Jack Grealish is about. Linking it with Neil Taylor. The whole pitch seems to slow down. He makes it look easy. Cuts inside. Puts it out to Al-Mohammedi on the right. Everyone's thinking, what is going on here? Al-Mohammedi doesn't shoot. He cuts it back in for Grealish. Grealish shoots past the goalkeeper. 2-1, absolute sins. Runs to the crowd. He's kissing and biting the badge. Mental. Villa have brought it back 2-1 against Rotherham in really, really tough circumstances. And then they go on to win the game.
Yeah, I mean, it was a big show of how much we've improved. And again, it was just, I think the Rotherham game basically was just a stomp on the rest of the competition saying, look, we're not messing about. we're here to take the 3 points. And it's just a great attitude to see. that never die attitude. It's just, as a football fan, that is the most pleasing thing. That is the most pleasing thing when you think you're down and out, but the team just is not allowing it. Those make for the most satisfying performances. And I don't care. Like we've had big wins over Sheffield Wednesday. We've had big wins over Bristol City now. You know, we've had big wins over promotion rivals, right? And perhaps since Birmingham, that was the best I felt after that Rotherham game. Lowly Rotherham. And that was the best I felt after a win in the last few weeks. Because there was no way whatsoever we should have come away with 3 points. No way. It's unheard of.
I think it was incredible. It was a really good win. That was Villa's seventh in a row. Bristol, of course, being the eighth in a row. My match ball, mate, is going to none other than Jack Grealish.
Mate, that move was beautiful. It was the stuff of Barcelona. It was amazing to watch, and you have to hand it down to El Mohammedi as well for setting him up in that. But that the way that Grealish would just almost communicated telepathically with the whole team there, just linking up with them, just basically telling them this is where I'm going to go, bring it back to me. It was the way that the whole team communicated there, and you could see it was that influence of Jack Grealish as a captain just running things right there. That goal itself was beautiful, and I have to agree with you there, James.
Jack Grealish as captain has come a long, long, long way. He's matured, and he looks even better for having the... I was almost about to say headband because of his hair. It was the armband. That he has the captain's armband. So you're giving Jack Grealish a match ball as well?
Well, we can't both give it Jack Grealish. I'm going to give the second one to... this is a good one. I think the defence did really well to kind of hold up after what had gone on. I think I'm probably going to give my second one to El Mohammedi for being involved in that attack as well. I thought he was very good down that right-hand side all game. So I'm going to give the second one to El Mohammedi.
Third one, joint one. I really can't look past John McGinn again.
Oh, really?
Yeah, run the show. Villa look like... I keep saying run the show. Only one person can run the show. I keep saying it for every good player. Sorry, I keep going back to a single basis for him. But John McGinn, Villa look like they didn't miss that missing man. They didn't look like they missed Tyrone Mings. They didn't look a man down because John McGinn is worth two.
Would you go with him over Conor Hourihan, who also had a very good game in midfield?
I would go for him over Jonathan Codger, who scored the equaliser as well. I'd go for John McGinn again.
Okay, yeah, fair. I think it's a good decision there. Again, just Terry alike in that game. I think his second half performance far better than his first half performance. I have to give him that.
Sheffield Wednesday is the final game we've got to speak about. I know we're stretched for time, so I think we will just do the match balls. The Steve Bruce narrative is over. There's nothing worth speaking about anymore because it has been dissected to death, and we finally banished that Steve Bruce thing, and we no longer need to care about playing against him because it doesn't need to come with a circus that always does. Albert Adoma scores, John McGinn scores, Tammy Abraham gets a goal late on. It's absolute scenes. Villa win it late on, really late on, in the 93rd minute, I believe.
93rd minute, yeah. 93rd minute, then they went and scored a second straight after that. But yeah, it was...
He had to save the penalty as well, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. It was just an absolute circus of a game, that. Because Gary Hooper obviously scored after 7 minutes in typical Steve Bruce fashion. I know we're trying to mince this up really quickly, but yeah, he scored in almost typical Steve Bruce fashion. It was a overhead, over the defenders, basically. It was a launched ball. He latched onto it, basically slotted it past Jed Steer. The next goal obviously was coming from John McGinn, which, again, a very pretty goal, to be fair to him. Always seems to have something in his locker, doesn't he? And it's just him running the show again. You know, he's been the best player in the championship, I think, in the last month or so.
Absolutely. John McGinn, absolute star. Dean Smith wins manager of the month for having won 7 games in a row. Of course, Bristol City being the 8th, Rotherham being the 7th, Sheffield Wednesday being the 6th. I want a match ball from you for Sheffield Wednesday.
Match ball. First one goes to John McGinn.
He has picked up bloody awards this show, mate. He has picked, and he deserves it. Every single one. That finish against Sheffield Wednesday was beautiful. And credit to Andre Green for making that, whipping that ball in, because it was a lost cause.
Oh, yeah, it was a good cross, wasn't it?
Yeah. My match ball is going to go to Jed Steer, because if Villa conceded that penalty, it was a weak penalty. But if they concede that goal, it's game over, in my opinion. Sheffield Wednesday would have shut down.
We've got to give that last one to Uncle Albert, haven't we? What, for the coolness in the last minute?
Yeah, coming up with a good, clean, cool finish. Does the old man dance? A lot of people send that reference to Steve Bruce. I don't think he is. I think Albert Adoma just loves to dance.
He does love a dance. He always has. We knew that when we saw the videos when he first signed for us.
But I will say, final note on Sheffield Wednesday, ignore the Steve Bruce stuff, ignore everything else. Just get that photo of Albert Adoma dancing primarily for the camera as everything goes off behind him. All he cares about is looking at the camera and dancing. And all you see in the background is Grealish and Abraham just sprinting into the crowd. Sheffield Wednesday heads down. There's chaos behind him, bedlam behind him. And he's just in the dance, mate.
Yeah, it almost really makes me hope that Villa keep hold of him just to see what happens in the Premier League, because there's still that hope for me that he reclaims that form from last season. Like, that player is still there.
Yeah, and he's not even that old. I mean, people say, oh, he's aging. Look, worst push comes to shove, he's going to leave because we need to cut wages. But there is a player there. There is a finisher there. There's a hard worker there as well.
Yeah, and I think he's also our most experienced winger. That's the other thing.
Yeah, unless you can find a direct upgrade. I mean, it'll be easier to do in the Premier League than the Championship. Unless you can find a direct upgrade and you're willing to risk that direct upgrade. I mean, it might be someone, Joe Lolley, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
Certainly an option. But yeah, I think there are. He's made the case. Let's not come to a definite conclusion, but he's made a case. We've got a single match to speak about, Bolton on Friday. It's just worth skimming over. They're 23rd with 32 points. There's 12 points left to play for, which are given 44. They've lost their last three. Top scorer, Josh McGuinness, with 4 goals. No one is creating anything except Gary O'Neill, who's probably 35 now. It is looking like a foregone conclusion. And it's a massive shame because that club, it's bad on the pitch, but that is caused by turmoil off of it. Ken Anderson needs to leave that club well alone. They're going down to League One. Unless they win out and the table doesn't move above them.
There's just no real way here I can envisage Bolton getting out of that relegation zone. The only team which can possibly do that is Rotherham, and it's even becoming a little bit of a stretch for them too. Bolton are poor. They have been poor for a while, and it's a shame because, you know, it's been years since everything started getting shot down over there, and they still haven't found any stability. And you know, you do really feel for him, because I know Villa have gone through a very long period of instability, but for Bolton it's been going on for, you know, a couple of years longer, and you do feel bad for
them. Yeah, I mean, they come close to folding, didn't they, a few weeks ago, and it's still an ongoing situation. You can follow Lion of Vienna Suite for more information, the SB Nation blog on Bolton. But it's worthless talking about any identity or play style because it's just completely been sucked out of them by off-the-pitch turmoil. There's nothing there, mate.
They've been walked over for the last few weeks. You know, Derby walked over them. Yeah, Ipswich beat them.
Yeah, and it's a real shame because I don't want to discredit a football club, but I think Bolton are completely worth discrediting, not the name or badge or shirt of that football club or its fans, but the ownership situation, fuck them. They're horrible. It's horrible. It's awful. And I think Villa will need to learn lessons from last season, come out professionally, think about that Rotherham game and think what can happen and make that work easier by playing on the front foot and battering Bolton. It's going to be a shame. It'll probably confirm Bolton's relegation. But that's what happens. That's what happens if the EFL allows bad owners. It makes for uncompetitive relegation battles because the teams that are getting relegated because of turmoil more than anything else.
Yeah, I can't see anything other than Villa beating this team either. And I mean, you're right. It's just that this team just is lacking. It's lacking a lot. There's some aging players in that team, as you mentioned. You know, Gary O'Neill playing behind the striker at 35 is just a bit weird at this point. David Wheater, you know, still sort of holding off over there. To be fair to him, he's been okay. I don't see an awful lot of a chance that Bolton come away with anything here. I mean, Will Buckley and Sammy Amiobi have both looked good, you know, at points during their careers. Their midfield is incredibly inexperienced, you know, through the centre. You know, they've got young Joshua Williams, haven't they, and Connolly. But, you know, as far as trying to make a case for them to beat Villa, I just don't see it. Just don't see it, James, at all.
Well, with that in mind, mate, to wrap up the show, I am going for a 3-0 Aston Villa win away at Bolton. I don't know what the stadium's called anymore. It's the University of Bolton Stadium or bloody Macron Stadium, Reebok Stadium. There's just so much change at that football club. It's unreal, but I'm going for a 3-0 Villa win.
All right. So, yeah, I think it's currently known as the Macron Stadium now. I'm going to go one up here, and this is a dangerous game. I'm going to go 5-0.
That is a take. That is a shout, mate. And a full, you know what? I'll put a quid on that and see if it comes in.
I'm here for the points.
That's haram, mate, for you. So I will. I won't give you any of those. those winnings.
I won't be betting on it.
I will, and you won't be having any of it, mate. I mean,
what could you get for a pound on 5-0?
Shall we have a quick look?
Yeah, go on. This is from any random betting website. No betting website in particular.
I'm not going to name it because we don't want to be betting. We don't want to be encouraging betting. But £1 on 5-0 would be funny. Aston Villa play Bolton at 3:00. Correct score. I almost went 5-0 and Bolton. So the odds are 33-1.
It's not a lot, is it?
And a pound on that would just give you £34.
Not amazing, is it?
£1 gets you 33, which isn't a long shot at all, mate.
No, so it could happen.
It could happen, 5-0. Let's go for it. I'm going to say, I said 3-0, you said 5-0. It's a big shout. Bolton on Friday at 3 p.m. After that, Millwall on Monday. But we'll be catching up on the weekend to talk through that anyway. Danny, thank you for coming on, mate. And we'll see you all next Sunday for the return of the Hulkcast. And hopefully it will be 9 wins in a row for Aston Villa. Thank you and goodbye.